You are Locked On Packers, your daily Green Bay Packers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
We said four quarters, all gas, no break. You guys did that today. Yeah. Hell of a job.
R-E-L-A-X. Relax. We're going to be okay.
It is time. It is time.
I feel like we can run the table. We're going to do it.
You are Locked On Packers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I am Peter Bukowski, and I cover the Packers for SB Nation and Packer Report. I cover the NFL around the internet, and you can follow me on Twitter at Peter_Bukowski. You can follow the podcast on Twitter at Locked On Packers. You can like us on Facebook. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, on Spotify, on Google Podcasts. Wherever you find podcasts, you will find Locked On Packers, the number one Packers podcast on the internet. And the show for fans who know what happened, they want to know why and how. Packers tight end, presumed tight end one, Jay Sternberger is on the show today. And I'm glad I found out how to say his name in time. For those of you who were listeners of the show last offseason, I said Jace's last name wrong for like the whole pre-draft process. And luckily, by the time the Packers picked him, someone had corrected me and I was able to get it right moving forward and hopefully have said it correctly for the last year. I should have asked him. I should have told him, frankly. We're going to get to Jace in just a little bit. Before we do, a little bit of news from yesterday. Reports out of Southern California suggest the Chargers are potentially interested in moving slot corner Desmond King. And the reason this has implications for Green Bay is they don't have a slot corner. Now, the reason the Chargers would move on from a good player, and Desmond King is a very good slot corner, even though he is undersized as a player and is a dynamic returner. The Chargers clearly decided Chris Harris, who is a former all-pro corner, is a better fit for them in their timeline. Maybe they want to compete right now. They don't want to give Desmond King a long-term deal. He is, after all, a slot corner. And so they could move on from him now. He's not going to play. In fact, when the Chargers put out a tweet a couple weeks ago after they signed Chris Harris, they did it with the Twitter handles of the starting defensive backs for the Chargers, including Chris Harris, and did not include Desmond King. And he quote tweeted it and, you know, used some emojis to make light of it, but made it clear that he had noticed this was going on. Friend of the show, Jason Hirschhorn, who does cover the Packers, but also covers the Chargers. He is based in Southern California and covers the Chargers for Sports Illustrated, had been telling me for, if not weeks, days, that this was potentially in the offing. I couldn't report it to you because he hasn't reported it. I feel like I'm not betraying his confidence because this has been reported. This is unfortunately something that happens in sports media a lot. You'll hear, I knew that. And frankly, I'm the kind of person that hates that too. When a reporter comes out and says, oh yeah, I knew that 6 weeks ago. And it's like, well, why didn't you say anything? Well, first of all, not my news to break. Second of all, he hadn't reported it yet. So once he reports it, then I can report it. I can relay it to you. So here we are. Now, what is the cost? And I think that is a crucial part of this. If, as Jason has suggested, it would be possible for the Packers or any team to acquire King for, let's say, a day three pick, and he's got 1 year left on his deal, and again, slot corner, not a boundary corner. Teams tend not to value those guys the same way. If you can get them for a fourth-round pick, a fifth-round pick, then you don't have to bring back Tremont Williams, who is going to cost more, by the way, than Desmond King would. Desmond King, in the last year of his rookie deal, about $2 million this season, Tremont Williams almost certainly going to cost more than that. So if you're the Packers, you're getting a cheaper option and a potentially better player. Now, of course, Tremont Williams brings all sorts of other things to the table. A leader, knows the system, knows his teammates, understands the guys in the division already. You know, you have that shorthand with the scouting and the shorthand with the coaches and you already know what Kenny Golladay looks like and Marvin Jones looks like and Allen Robinson and Anthony Miller and Adam Thielen and whoever else the Vikings are going to put out there. Maybe he doesn't know those guys because, frankly, no one knows those guys right now. And that all has value too. But the Packers could do what the Patriots often do, and that is trade for a player who's fallen out of favor with his team, someone with pedigree normally, and someone who has potentially been a good player in the past, and they let that guy play out their contract, let them walk, and then the Patriots take their comp pick. And they turn that player into multiple picks later in the draft. They trade down, they create more value for themselves, and this is how the Patriots are able to restock their lineup all the time, and they always have these players, and they're not paying them top of dollar, and they're not paying them top of market money. The Packers could even trade for Desmond King on a low round pick, fourth, fifth round, whatever it is, and then pay him. He's really good. He's young. You could give him money. Now, there have to be salary cap machinations and all of those kinds of things. Maybe you have to release Lane Taylor to make the money work. Maybe you have to rework a deal with Corey Linsley, or you have to, you know, give David Bakhtiari an extension that lowers his cap number for 2020. There's always ways to work it. There's always money in the banana stand. The Packers could make this work, and this is the second trade that's come up around the Packers this week that would make them significantly better and would only cost them a day three pick, likely. Brandon Cooks and Desmond King. These are moves a team like the Packers, whose Super Bowl window is now, could be making and still could make with the draft still a couple of weeks away. All right, I want to get to our conversation with Jace Sternberger. He is in his second year out of Texas A&M, and you can follow him on Twitter at _JStern, coming to us from his hometown in Oklahoma. So you know we're going to have to talk about that. Jace, thanks for coming on Locked On Packers.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
So the question that everyone wants to know is, have you seen Tiger King and have you heard of that zoo before? Because I know you're from Oklahoma.
I've actually never heard of the zoo before, but I have watched Tiger King. And I don't know if I'm more proud to be from Oklahoma or more embarrassed, but I'm thinking on the more proud side, because that's just, there's a lot of Joe Exotics out there, just not dealing with animals, but there's a lot of characters in Oklahoma.
I was just going to ask you, did you watch that going, yeah, I've met that person before, like, you know, that version of that person?
Yeah, no, that's what's funny. I'm pretty sure everybody from Oklahoma watching that, they know somebody. So it was, I enjoyed it. It was funny to me.
Well, I think you are not the only one who felt that way, for sure. So, I mean, this is a weird time of year in any normal circumstance, but these are not normal circumstances. So, you know, what are you able to do? What are you doing to pass the time?
Joking with my dad, you know, literally the only thing you can do is work out besides just staying off your feet. So we got a little in-home gym set up in our garage. We do our running, we do all that. My whole family's pretty fit, so that helps us keep everybody motivated. But other than that, just watching a lot of shows, a lot of movies, a lot of video games.
What has been the one thing you've watched lately where you're like, man, I can't believe I've never watched this? Have you gone back to something where you're like, wow, this is really good? How come no one told me to watch this?
Not yet. But like, I've loved the Ozark since day one, but I finished it and then I've rewatched it. I'm already almost done rewatching it for a second time, and I appreciate it way more. So I got to do it three times the charm.
Now, how different is like the Ozark aesthetic, that sort of culture from what you're used to in Oklahoma? Because not that far.
That's what I'm saying. That's why I like it so much. Because I'm not saying like there's not a lot of heroin dealers in Oklahoma like in Kingfisher, but for the most part, the show's pretty similar. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
people wise, like,
for sure.
There's a lot of similarities. You know, we don't got the, I don't think we have cartel in Kingfisher either, but you know, it's all pretty relatable, and just, you know, small town, the pride, people taking their stuff, and all the little things like the boat docks and the little parties, like that's Oklahoma to a T.
For sure. Are you, when you come home, I mean, are you, I know that, you know, this is my wife, for example, her family, my family, they've got these thick Wisconsin accents. And whenever she comes back from being home for a couple of days, I hear it a little bit more. Are you falling back into it? Do you have the drawback than more than what you did during the season?
I wouldn't say so, because like most people down here, like when they hear me talk, like it's, I don't even think anything of it. But when I'm in Wisconsin, everybody says I have a southern accent, which is crazy to me, because I really don't. I'm like, you should hear some of the people talk back where I'm from.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say it's not too bad.
Do you get protective when you watch a show if someone's messing up a southern accent? You're like, man, people do not sound like that.
No, I have fun with it all.
So I was, you know, when I was evaluating you when you were coming out, you know, at Texas A&M, and you were going to be an NFL prospect before you got picked by the Packers, I was watching you going, how did this guy not get more of a run at Kansas and you know, have to transfer and do that whole thing? Because, you know, no one in the SEC could cover you. So, I mean, can you just walk us through what the circumstances were that led you to make the transfer and then ultimately end up, you know, with Jimbo Fisher at Texas A&M?
I just don't think I was definitely a match for Kansas. Our coaches, he liked to use more smaller bodies, slot receivers, and he tried to incorporate the tight end, but he could just never pull the trigger on it and like actually like, you know, make a game plan around a tight end or incorporate him. It was more like if they can do what a slot receiver can do, then. But not that I couldn't. I just didn't get as many opportunities. And then one thing led to another. You bring in more prospects. And, yeah, it just wasn't a good fit anymore. And I went through, like, 3 OCs when I was there. Wasn't even some of the same coaches who recruited me. It was just I just needed to get out of there because I still wanted to be a football player. So I love the university, though. But that's why I was like, yeah. Because I originally was going to go JUCO out of high school, and then this was just kind of the, you know, I guess got to go JUCO so I can cancel out all the what ifs.
Yeah. How did you ultimately end up in College Station?
So I was originally probably going to commit to Boise State. And then for some reason, my head coach at JUCO was just like, hey, don't do anything crazy, like commit. He's like, give it some time. Like you're starting to heat up a little bit. And I was like, okay. Literally, like I'm on Thanksgiving break. I get a call from Coach Craig, the receivers coach now, and he was just like, hey, there are rumors that we could be going to A&M, but we're also at Florida State right now, regardless Jimbo wants you. So once I heard that, like, I know Jimbo's history with tight ends. I was like, that's all I needed to hear. I was like, so they technically, like, I never, like, literally posted blessed to receive an offer from A&M. Like, I never did any of that. Like, it was so low-key because I was like, basically, I was going to be Jimbo's guy, so I was like, that was late November, so I kept literally. I knew he was going to A&M 2 weeks before it happened. I just had to keep quiet, and it was fun because you know I'm a sports nerd, so I was like, I know news before ESPN and stuff. And
you got it before Pete Thamel and all those guys.
Exactly.
I mean, you said you know the history with Jimbo. It's not just the with the tight ends. I mean, you're talking about a national championship winning coach. You're talking about, you know, Florida
right.
State pedigree. And he says, you're my guy. You get there, and all of a sudden, like, the offense is for you.
Yeah, like, there literally is no tight end. Like, I was day one started, and it was like, oh, my. Now, granted, like, it was hell when I first got there, like, because I was the only tight end. So that means I had to do everything, first team, second string, third team, all special teams. Like, I was dying. Like, it was hell, like, the practices, but, like, I just got in super scary condition, like good wise, like, you know what I'm saying? Like I was really, really in shape, and it kind of made me a monster in a good way. You know, it kind of changed my demeanor. Like, okay, I'm built different than everybody. And, you know, so the spring was crazy. And then, you know, the fall was awesome.
Yeah. I mean, what was it? That's a pretty big jump from JUCO to, you know, being, you know, basically you were de facto the number one receiver in that offense, really. I mean, that's a jump. Did you ever, or when you look back on it now, I mean, do you get a chance to just be like, hey, that was really cool?
Yeah, no, I definitely more have in these past couple of months, like even after my first, I think it was right after the season was over. My rookie season, I'm just like, dang, like I've really, because, you know, that's the first time I can finally take a break. And, like, since I declared for college, like, I haven't been busy nonstop. So it was like, I really reflected on it. I was like, man, I just think it's funny. I was like, you really came in there, and then, you know, practices, no one's guarding you, this and that. And you used to worship those dudes who played in the SEC, like, growing up.
Yeah, so then, you know, you talk about a two-year difference. I mean, from going from junior college to the NFL, when you first get out there with those guys, that's got to ever. I mean, you hear this all the time from players. The speed is different. You got to think differently. The assignments are different. And tight end is a notoriously difficult position for first-year players to learn. What was the biggest thing that you had to sort of get on the same page with, whether it was schematics, whether it was the size, the speed? I mean, what was it?
The details. It was no longer you can just you know, think you're going to be successful because you're athletic and, like, you got a little, you know, you're tough, you got a little toughness in you, and, like, you know, you got to know your details and really put the information with it.
And so did, I mean, you were in a position where you had, you know, you had Rob Tonyan and then two veterans. I mean, I assume that it was helpful for you to be able to watch Jimmy Graham and Mercedes Lewis go about what they're doing and say, okay, this is how this works.
Most definitely.
So, I mean, can you pinpoint anything in particular early on where something stood out? Jimmy, I mean, there was so much from camp that, oh, you know, Jimmy Graham looks awesome in practice or whatever it is. And you're just like, one of them did something and you're like, whoa, like these guys are serious next level stuff.
I think Mercedes was doing like a pass pro. Something. It was just like the way he grabs the Darius, and it was just like so controlling. I was like, oh my gosh, like he could crush me. And it was just like, this dude is like, yeah, it was just different watching him every day, really.
So I'm glad you brought up Za'Darius, because he has been one of the guys that's been credited with this change in the culture and the vibe around the team. Now, you weren't with the team before last year, so, you know, and I know that you can't do any comparing and contrasting, but when you guys get together and it starts to coalesce a little bit, are you aware of it? I mean, does it feel, can you feel it when the guys are sort of vibing and there's this energy around the team?
Oh, 100%. That was the biggest plus that came from this year. Was you hear all the time in college is like, oh, the NFL is a business. The coaches don't care about you. It's all about the playbooks and winning, this and that. And, like, I had so much fun this year because, like, I've always been a big believer. Like, I've won state championships. I've, you know, been successful in college with wins. Like, I'm on all those teams, always had great chemistry. And so, like, being at Green Bay this first year, and it was like nothing changed for me. And I was like, dang, like, you constantly heard throughout the locker room, it's not like this everywhere else. Like, just know that. And so it was like, and I was just like, well, man, that's how it is like right now. So like, I'm enjoying it. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. It is like, this is like, it was the fun. And Za'Darius was 100%. Like, he always brought energy. I think it made some of the older guys kind of more relaxed and, you know, like, hey, it's okay to have fun. We can still get shit done, you know?
Yeah. I mean, absolutely. You heard multiple guys, longtime veterans. I mean, Aaron Rodgers said it's the most fun he's had playing football in a long time. Brian Bulaga said it's maybe the most fun he's ever had playing football. So, I mean, it seems like there was a clear difference here. How do you maintain that? How do you keep that going when you have, you know, the roster is going to be a little different this year. You're going to bring in a new group of guys. You've got a couple free agents, you know, Christian Kirksey, Rick Wagner. How do you keep that going?
Simple, you know, we have a foundation that the veterans, you know, they set last year, and it's just the culture, how we are, you know, take it one day at a time, we control what we control, and like really just do the best you can each day to invest in yourself, and then, you know, the other stuff comes with it, you know, when guys are constantly working on good character, working on good manners, and just little things like pushing their chair in after you eat, you know, little stuff like that, you know, just we take pride in that, and so I think that it's just a standard you just have to maintain.
Yeah, there is a lot of questions about this offseason, and it's a big one for you going into year two. You were asked, you know, you got injured in the preseason, and that obviously sets you back, not able to get on the field until the middle of the year. And then when you do get on the field, you have to play a little bit out of position. At what point does whether it's Coach LaFleur or Coach Hackett come to you and say, hey, we need you to do this thing for us now?
You said when did that happen?
Yeah, like, and what is that conversation like when they, because they basically said, you know, or I don't know what they said. That's why I'm asking. But because you basically had to play fullback for a lot of snaps when you got on the field finally.
Yeah, I mean, the day I got placed on IR, you know, Goody, he told me that we're going to need you come playoffs, so you better do whatever you do. You got to do to get ready during this, these time that you have to heal up and stuff. And so I was just like, I mean, that was the game plan the whole time for me anyway, that I was going to make an impact this year. So I was like, you know, we got to do it.
Right.
And so I started the rehab process, you know, everything. I hired my own body coach. You know, I'm taking it really serious, losing weight. Everything's going good. And then, like, you know, I'm starting. Then I started to get a practice and, you know, start doing some things here and there. And then J.O., just my position coach, just texted me one Sunday or one I say Sunday because I'm thinking weekends, on a Monday, like on our day off, or Tuesday on our day off, he's like, you ready for fullback? And I was just like, yeah. Like, I mean, he was like, we have to know that position anyway, so it's just being, it's a mentality, you know, being physical, which you are. We wouldn't have even thought of putting you there. So that's, the rest was history. Like, we didn't make a big deal. We just called it. He was like, you're just H. That's all it is now. Don't even think of it as fullback. So they were going to, because I knew, because he was like, you know, he's gonna, he said, you know, Matt's going to put routes in for you. He's like, and I was like, all right, cool.
Yeah. And there were, I mean, even before you were really fully, you know, in that role, that there were some cut ups and some clips around me. And I remember watching it when I would go back and watch the tape after the game, like, oh, they got Jace on the wheel route. He's wide open down the field.
Yeah.
When you're watching that back, are you trying to catch Aaron's eye in the meeting room? Like, hey man, hey 12, can I get the ball next time?
Nah, see, that's the thing that, like, I don't ever, like, I was just taught at a very young age, like, never to show up your quarterback, or like, and I've never wanted to be the guy who's like, because I hear receivers all the time, oh, I'm open, throw me the ball, and I'm like, okay, no, I'm not doing that. Like, if I'm open, like, he's playing quarterback, he knows what he's doing, like, you know what I'm saying, like, he has enough going on through his head, like, he doesn't need me telling him me he's open. And then I just believe through that, you know, that's why I've been so successful, because for some my quarterback, that's why I build relationships with them, we got good trust. But, like, even, like, the both wheel routes that I was open on, literally after that, like, when they're watching film, Aaron comes up, like, gives me that look, you know, like, eyes get big, he's like, be ready, big boy, or, you know, something like that. Like, it's just like, he sees it, like, he, obviously he knows what he's doing, so it's like, I don't ever have to say that stuff. And that's how I've always just handled situations with quarterbacks.
How can you get a nickname? Because, you know, Mercedes has Big Dog, like, you know, Aaron loves to give out nicknames. We got to get you one.
Yeah, no, I actually have quite a bit. I'm just not going to tell you any of them, because I got to get some more appropriate ones.
All right, we'll protect the innocent on that one. That's fine. I get it. So one play that I think a lot of fans have really latched onto, and it's something that frankly stood out to me when I went back and rewatched it, was there was that touchdown in the NFC Championship game, and it was a second reaction play, which is, you know, some classic Aaron Rodgers stuff. So, you know, was that something that was just instinct? Like, can you walk us through that play and sort of tell us what you saw?
Yeah, like, there's really a lot more that goes into that play for me that, like, is even way more important than even the whole touchdown. Just through, like, you know, making mistakes once and not letting it happen again. You know, Aaron, earlier in the year, he made me a signal, and I read the signal wrong. And, like, you know, that's the thing with Aaron. He's so secret with his signals, and it's like, it's intense as a receiver and as a young guy, you know, to make sure he changed, like, to see the sign and see that he changes it and stuff. He does it so casual. And he actually changed my route. You'll see him. He, like, points up to his lip, and I knew I had to change my route. And so, like, the fact that, like, I changed, you know, I learned from my mistake, then did it, and then it led to the touchdown. It was just like, you know, it was how it was supposed to go down. But
just finishing up here, as you go into the offseason, I mean, no one knows in late January that we're going to be in the position we are now. But, you know, did you have, you know, an exit interview with the coach and say, you know, this is what we want you to work on, this is what we're looking for from you, you know, going into the offseason and going into next year?
Yeah, you know, I had an exit meeting. Like, I had really positive exit meetings, you know, about what was about to take place, you know, and what could happen free agency, what couldn't happen, and what they had their visions of me. And, you know, we don't have to get into all of those details. But Coach LaFleur, in our meeting, he just, you know, he told me I just need to be working on my releases because, you know, I'll be in the slot a lot this year. And moving around. So I just need to be able to, because he was like, that can help take my game to the next level. Because, you know, all my releases right now are just off athleticism, but really dissecting, you know, and getting a release tree, it would be really beneficial for me.
If only you had a player on your team who specializes in releases.
Exactly.
Number 17 is pretty good off the line of scrimmage.
One of the best.
So, I mean, how much does that, all of this affect the amount of work that you can do? I mean, are you guys going to be able to, have you heard from the team yet about what you're going to be able to do with, whether it's meetings, whether it's, you know, Zooms with the strength coaches? I mean, what is your offseason come May going to look like? Do you know yet?
You know, we're just playing it by year. You know, we've been more in communications with, you know, how to stay safe during this whole, you know, pandemic. So it's, yeah, that's all really I can tell.
Well, I hope you do stay safe. I'm glad you have a gym and you can stay active, and there's always Fortnite. So, Jace, I appreciate you taking the time. Let's do this again.
Sounds good.
All right, I want to thank Jace for joining the show. Awesome to talk to him. Fun guy. And I thought that was fascinating what he said at the end of the interview about what Matt LaFleur told him. You're going to be in the slot a lot, so work on your releases. And by the way, being in the slot means not having to worry as much about your release, because if you're in the slot, you're back off the line of scrimmage, so it's harder for defenders to get their hands on you. I wonder if we could also see Jace in split out on the boundary situations where they're trying to pull a linebacker or a safety and open up space in the middle of the field. That could also be something that he brings them. He can be that move tight end. And when you have Jimmy Graham in front of you, it's tough to get snaps. Now, Green Bay, you know, wanted to bring in another guy. He hinted at that in our conversation about, you know, what the offseason conversation was. But clearly, he's going to have a role in this team, in this offense in 2020, and potentially a big one. I think he can be a really good player, and I was really excited about him coming out of college. So, and he was honest. I thought he was really honest about, you know, the Kansas situation just wasn't for him. It wasn't a good fit. He wasn't going to get a chance to show off his skills, and he found an opportunity where he was. So that's great for him. We're going to be back tomorrow. And then next week, we're going to be, you know, a day closer. And then next week, several days closer to the NFL draft. So a lot more to get to next week. I'm working on some interviews. I'm really happy with the week of interviews we did this week. I'm going to try and, if we can, do two a week for the next couple weeks as we get to the draft. Because I'm sure you're sick of listening to me talk. I'm certainly sick of talking and hearing my own voice. So that means I know you're sick of it too. So we're going to try and get some other voices on here in the coming days and weeks. Remember, you can follow me on Twitter. You don't have to hear me on Twitter. You can just read words that I say. You can follow the podcast on Twitter at Locked On Packers. Like us on Facebook. Subscribe to the podcast, iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts. Wherever you find podcasts, you will find Locked On Packers. And anytime you want to hit us up on the Locked On Packers fan hotline, you can do that, 920-341-3775, to stay Locked On Packers.